Blog Talk Radio.
Yanis Varoufakis on the trial of Julian Assange.
It's very important to know what that court will look like in the United States. It will be held behind closed doors. His lawyers will not be told what the charges are and what the evidence is. One judge, no jury, will hear directly from the CIA and the NSA and what the evidence is, and the judge is going to decide.
On the next broadcast of TUC Radio.
Coming to you live from Northeast Jefferson County, Kansas. Your one true voice in Kansas. This is Radio Free Kansas.
My goodness. I'm telling you, this is a great show coming up. Great episode of TUC Radio. Maria Gilardin really did a great one on this one. Always interesting in this kind of stuff when she broadcasts it. That's right, we're live. It is it's February 28th. We're moving right into the end of the month rather quickly. I'm telling you, the weather has been extremely strange in the last 24 hours. It began with temperatures in the 70s and mid-70s yesterday. And last night I did fire watch. Well, all the way till this morning I did fire watch. And it was incredible to watch it change. Out here, now I'm not talking Topeka or Leavenworth or Kansas City. I'm talking here. Up on top of the hill, just south of Nortonville, about 4.5 miles, it got to 11 degrees. That's right, a 60-plus degree drop in temperatures from mid-afternoon yesterday to dawn this morning. And I was up, loading the wood stove, keeping things going in the house. It got to 11 degrees by dawn. That's an amazing phenomenon. I've never seen that in over 20 years out here. I've never seen that kind of temperature shift. It hit all at once. It came out of the northwest. It's still with us right now. The sun is out and it's warming up, but I don't think it's going to get above 40 degrees. And according to the computer models, we'll be down to below freezing again by tomorrow morning. I've never seen that kind of temperature drop that quickly. It's quite a deal, really. But as I said, we've got a great show today, and you can always call in. The green room is always open. I'll visit with you. Now, if you're calling anonymously, I will probably blow you off. But, I mean, if you call in, you got my number, I got yours. We can visit in the green room. However, most of this time is reserved, especially for the first hour or so. That's what it's all about. You know, it is TUC radio time. Here's the latest headlines from the United Nations.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. UN relief agencies operating in war-torn Gaza voiced deep frustration on Tuesday over continuing aid access restrictions imposed by the Israeli military. The development comes after ambulances carrying 24 patients away from Al Amal Hospital in Khan Yunis were stopped for several hours on Sunday while health workers were searched and detained. From the UN Health Agency, WHO, here's spokesperson Christian Lindmeier.
You can imagine being already transferred under life-threatening circumstances, not being able to move or being able to move and then being made to stand outside and having to wait for 7 hours is pretty unimaginable.
Several patients, if not all of them, required some kind of surgical intervention, which could not have been provided at Al Amal, according to the UN Aid Coordination Office, OCHA, which confirmed that the evacuation mission had been flagged to the Israeli authorities as part of standard deconfliction protocols. The Israeli military had not given any information or any communication about why the ambulances were detained for at least 7 hours, nor why the paramedics had been taken out and forced to undress, with two still not freed, Ocha said. Staying with the Middle East, where UN peacekeepers expressed alarm on Tuesday at an escalation in hostilities on the border area known as the Blue Line that separates Israel and Lebanon. The alert from the UN Interim Force in Lebanon, or UNIFIL, follows what it calls a concerning shift in the exchanges of fire in recent days between Hezbollah militia in South Lebanon and the Israeli military. In a statement, UNIFIL reported an expansion and intensification of strikes, while also calling for both sides to halt hostilities. The on-off conflict between militia in Lebanon and Israel has claimed too many lives, jeopardized livelihoods, and changed the life of tens of thousands of civilians on both sides of the Blue Line, the UN mission said. UNIFIL has continued its engagement with both sides to decrease tensions and prevent dangerous misunderstandings, but recent events have the potential to put at risk a political solution to this conflict, the UN force warned. A staggering 2.6 billion people have no internet access, but a $9 billion investment by mobile phone operators should help fix that, according to the UN International Telecommunications Union, ITU. Announcing major commitments to extend services and network upgrades by major mobile telecoms firms including China Telecom and VEON, ITU Secretary-General Doreen Bogdan-Martin said that millions of people stood to benefit from more widely available and affordable online access. Universal meaningful connectivity is within our grasp, she told the Mobile World Congress in Barcelona on Monday. The announcement brings the total amount of planned investment in infrastructure, services and support for ITU's Partner to Connect Digital Coalition platform to over $46 billion since it launched nearly 2 years ago. Daniel Johnson, UN News. This is the news in brief from the United Nations. An all-out Israeli offensive on Rafah would spell the end for UN-led humanitarian relief to the people of Gaza, UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres warned on Monday. The UN chief was speaking to the Human Rights Council, where he urged the international community to fulfill its primary responsibility of promoting and protecting human rights everywhere and for everyone. Almost 30,000 people have been killed in Gaza and over 70,000 wounded amid intense Israeli shelling since the 7th of October last year, according to the enclave's health authorities. In Geneva, Mr. Guterres again condemned Hamas-led attacks on Israel, but insisted that any further extension of the Israeli ground operation in the south of Gaza would be terrifying for more than 1 million Palestinian civilians sheltering there. It would put the final nail in the coffin of our aid programs, he said.
Nothing can justify humans' deliberate killing, injuring, torturing and kidnapping of civilians, the use of sexual violence, and indiscriminate launching of rockets towards Israel. But nothing justifies the collective punishment of the Palestinian people.
Mr. Guterres went on to say that the rule of law and the rules of war were being undermined in conflicts from Ukraine to Sudan and from Myanmar to the Democratic Republic of the Congo. To produce long-term solutions to these crises, the UN chief called for member states to step up and recommit to working for peace and security rooted in human rights. And he pledged the UN's total support as he announced the launch of the United Nations Agenda for Protection in partnership with the Human Rights Office. The term modern slavery is used often to describe forced labor. It's a scourge that frequently affects migrants, and according to the UN Agency for Migration, IOM, there are 28 million victims worldwide. In a bid to tackle the problem, IOM has announced that it's beefing up a successful partnership with Japanese electronics giant Panasonic that protects and reinforces workers' rights and well-being. The manufacturer has worked with the UN agency for years in Malaysia to promote the ethical recruitment and employment of migrant staff, who face three times more exploitation in the wider private sector than local staff, data has shown. The agreement is in line with UN guiding principles on business and human rights, and IOM's own migrant worker guidelines for employers. The pact is an important part of the UN agency's efforts to help migrant workers find jobs legally, as an alternative to irregular migration, which is often dangerous and exploitative. A top rights expert on Monday condemned continued efforts by the Russian judiciary to silence anti-war dissident Oleg Orlov. According to reports, prosecutors sought a 2-year, 11-month prison sentence for Mr. Orlov, after he repeatedly discredited Russian armed forces involved in the full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Mariana Katsarova, UN Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights in Russia, insisted that the charges against him had no basis in international law. Ms. Katsarova, who is an independent rights expert and who reports to the Human Rights Council, also said that the case flouted Russia's obligations to create a safe environment for activists. Mr. Orlov is co-chair of the Nobel Peace Prize-winning Human Rights Center Memorial. In October last year, a court in Moscow fined him 150,000 rubles, or around $1,600, after he staged several protests against Russia's ongoing military campaign in Ukraine. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. The War on Truth, Julian Assange with Yanis Varoufakis. DM25 goes live stream while London's High Court decides whether Julian Assange can be extradited to the U.S. DM25 is a pan-European progressive movement. They aim to democratize the EU before it disintegrates. DM25 met on February 20, 2024 to comment live on the court proceedings. Yanis Varoufakis, economics professor and acclaimed author, was Minister of Finance in 2015, negotiating on behalf of the Greek government during the debt crisis. The moderator is Miran Khalili. He's an advisor to DM25. Miran Khalili.
Hello, 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 and welcome. I'm Miran Khalili. We are DM25, a radical political movement for Europe, and this is another live discussion with our coordinating team. And today we're looking at press freedom, and specifically at one of our original causes here at DM25, the fight for the release of Julian Assange. For newcomers, it's worth restating the key elements of Julian's story just quickly. He's a journalist who, over a decade ago, via his media outlet, WikiLeaks, uncovered evidence of the crimes of the United States, among other countries. This included proof of the massacre of civilians by the US military in Afghanistan and Iraq, of torture, of mass surveillance, and of widespread corruption, of a web of secret power, from the arms industry to security agreements to elections and beyond. And for this brave act of investigative journalism, Julian, the father of two small boys, has been held without trial in a maximum security prison in the UK for almost 5 years. He has not seen the sun since he was incarcerated, and he's been confined to a cell for 23 out of every 24 hours. Now, Julian's final appeal is going on as we speak at London's High Court. If he loses, he'll almost certainly be extradited to the US to face 175 years in prison. This would have huge implications for human rights and for press freedom around the world, and it would tell anyone who wants to seriously probe the actions of the powerful, better think again, because this is what could happen to you. Yet today, the radical transparency and subversive spirit of Julian Assange and WikiLeaks have never been more needed. We're living in a dangerous moment, with a horrific war continuing in Ukraine, tens of thousands of civilians in Gaza being murdered, the far right on the rise, behind-the-scenes deals with fossil fuel companies suffocating our planet, everything we've been discussing in these live streams. But instead of a vibrant fourth estate, we have a largely compliant media, whose idea of challenging power is official say journalism and softball questions. So tonight, we're asking, what does Julian's case mean for the future of journalism, of democratic discourse, and of our understanding of what states and corporations do in the shadows? And how do these dynamics affect our ability to confront power and make informed decisions as a society? Our panel, including our own Yanis Varoufakis. Yanis, floor is yours.
Well, thank you. Thank you to, it's wonderful to have you such go back. The onus falls on me to play the role of quasi-journalist just to remind our audience of what is at stake, of what exactly what's happening in London today and tomorrow. So Julian's lawyers are appealing to the High Court in Britain. And they're appealing what? This is the second appeal. The first appeal, which was an appeal to grant Julian the right to argue his case in front of the High Court, has been already rejected. So this is a second and final appeal, an appeal over the lost appeal. If that is turned down, then the only flicker of hope that he will not be extradited is that the European Court of Human Rights is going to hear his case and overrule the British High Court. Now, there is no guarantee that the European Court of Human Rights would even hear the case or even consider the case. There is a small possibility that the European Court of Human Rights will step in. Moreover, even if it does, there is a very strong possibility that Britain will disregard the European Court of Human Rights because the present government in London, and especially the governing majority of the Tory party, of the Conservatives, are toying with the idea of removing the European Court of Human Rights from any kind of jurisdiction over the UK as part of Brexit. You will recall that the European Court of Human Rights is not part of the European Union. It's got nothing to do with the European Union. It's not the European Court. It's the European Court of Human Rights that belongs to the Council of Europe, which is much bigger than the EU. Britain has been a member from the beginning of the European Council and the European Court of Human Rights, and remains so after Brexit. But because this government of Rishi Sunak wants to violate international law and to send asylum seekers to Rwanda without first processing their claims for asylum, they had already been discussing in London the possibility that the United Kingdom effectively severs its links with the European Court of Human Rights. To sum up, if we lose this case tomorrow and the High Court does not grant Julian the right to appeal, then the European Court of Human Rights is a very unsafe proposition. First, they may not want to know. And secondly, even if they want to hear the appeal and they decide in favor of Julian, there is a very strong possibility that London is simply going to say, we don't care what you say, European Court of Human Rights. Okay? I'm mentioning this in order to make clear what kind of significance this court case has. Now, on the actual arguments that Fitzgerald and the other lawyers on behalf of our team are putting to the judges of the High Court, I've been monitoring what happened this morning. There were two main points of law that were being put forward by the legal team. And they both concern violations of the treaty between the United Kingdom and the United States regarding extradition. The first is a clear one. It's a self-evident one. The extradition treaty between the United Kingdom and the United States clearly excludes from the extradition process anyone who is being persecuted for political reasons. Now, if anybody has ever been persecuted for political reasons, that's Julian Assange. The fact that they are masquerading this under the Espionage Act doesn't change the fact that Julian's persecution is fully and entirely political. Because if it was a matter of the printing of these particular or the publication of these particular videos and texts and memoranda from within the military establishment in the United States, then they should have arrested everybody working for the New York Times and the Washington Post because they printed it, actually. So why are they not pursuing them? And they're pursuing Julian because it was Julian made available these he didn't extract these bits of information, this data, these videos, these texts, these documents from anyone. He received them like the New York Times received them from Dan Ellsberg back in the early 1970s. So it is clear that Julian has done nothing which is outside the remit of journalism, and therefore his persecution is nothing but political because of the embarrassment that he caused to the United States government. So that's the first argument that our lawyers are putting to the high court judges. The second concerns the death sentence, because the British have a policy of never extraditing to the United States anyone who is facing the death penalty. There have been murderers, convicted murderers, people who actually confessed to murder, who were not extradited to the United States. You know, people who were clearly criminals and murderers, whom the British authorities refused to extradite to the United States on the basis that they were facing the death sentence in the United States, a sentence which the British Constitution, unwritten Constitution, but Constitution nevertheless, prohibits. The charges under the Espionage Act that have been laid against Julian clearly make it possible for him to be given a death sentence, clearly. What the American authorities did in order to circumvent that problem is they have given a kind of a guarantee, commitment to the British courts that he will not be condemned to death. He will not be given the death sentence. However, if you read the fine print, it says unless he commits acts that warrant the death sentence. So this is the absurdity. Think of this. The United States security apparatus, which had planned and tried to implement his murder. So the people who planned and tried to implement his murder will be the ones that, according to the British justices, will be determining whether he has done something or he will do something that warrants them killing him. You only have to state this to realize the enormity of the hypocrisy and the toxicity of what is being discussed. Now, of course, even if they don't put him to the electric chair or inject him with some lethal dose of something, the crucial issue is that they will murder him anyway, simply by throwing him into the high-security supermax prison, this particularly vicious form of solitary confinement. He's already in solitary confinement, but the difference between the solitary confinement in Belmarsh and the one that he will face in the United States is night and day, just black and white. There's a huge difference. The supermax jail that he's going to be put into has been designed in order to destroy human soul. I mean, if you put me in there, I would have committed suicide. There's no doubt about that. Within a few days, I would find a way to kill myself. And you have to remember that Julian has been incarcerated for 13 years, the last 5 years in solitary confinement. Let us not forget also that he's on the spectrum of autism, and the particular part of the spectrum of autism where sensory deprivation is a clear means of torturing him in a way that it wouldn't be torturing me or you. Having said all that, and to wind down, it is not Julian who is on trial as we speak. It is Britain's High Court, and it is the High Court judges that are being tried by public opinion, by history, by morality, by progressives around the world. Their decision will decide whether they will be found guilty, gross violation of the principles of justice and speech, freedom of the press. If they deny Julian the right to appeal, and I would even go further, even if they grant that right to appeal and they don't give him bail so that he can get out of that hellhole in Belmarsh prison, which I visited a couple of times, they will be issuing their own condemnation in the eyes of fair-minded, truly liberal people in the United Kingdom and around the world. And as Sajko indicated, who benefits really from Julian's slow murder, from his continued incarceration? Yes, of course, it is the national security establishment in the United States has been very hard done by. They've been very embarrassed by the revelations of the way they were killing people in Iraq and Afghanistan and all that. But in the end, the true beneficiaries of his incarceration and slow death are tyrants worldwide. Because, you know, what can you tell? How can anyone who supports the liberal establishment in the United Kingdom or in the United States or in the European Union accuse Putin of killing journalists, Navalny, whoever? Putin has to do is turn around and say, yeah, but you're killing a man who did nothing wrong except to tell the truth about your murder, your murderous campaigns in Iraq and Afghanistan. Every tyrant in the world hides behind the fate of Julian Assange in order to justify their murderous deeds. This is why it is our duty to continue struggling and never to forget that even if he is released, we must continue the struggle. We must continue the struggle until the people who are today persecuting Julian end up in prison. If these judges turn a blind eye to the facts of the case and do not grant him appeal, they must be prosecuted until the end of the days. We need to prosecute them and the war criminals that Julian has exposed, because together they are complicit in large-scale murder and the murder of freedom of the press, murder of freedom of expression. DiEM25 has had the privilege of having Julian Assange as its founding, co-founding members. Remember, he was at the Volksbühne on the 9th of February 2016. I think we should all feel very proud of that. Because let me remind you of something else. Today, I'm very pleased to see that almost all progressives are coming out in support of Julian Assange. Not only progressives. It was wonderful that last week in the Australian Parliament, where there wasn't a single member of parliament a few years ago supporting Julian Assange, last week there was a very large majority in the Australian Parliament voting in favor of a petition, of a motion to recommend, to demand the release of Julian Assange. But back in 2016, when you and I were DiEM25, we're not only backing Julian Assange, but we had him there on the screen. If you remember the Volksbühne talking to us live from the Ecuadorian embassy. Back then, there were many so-called progressives, leftists, so-called feminists, who were taking us to task and demonizing us for letting Julian Assange, for giving Julian Assange a podium, an opening to present his case and presenting his views. Very few people between 2016 and 2020 dared say anything in favor of Julian's case. Personally, I'm not going to forget that. They will always, always carry that burden around their necks, because it just goes to show that the so-called left, the so-called progressives, when it mattered, they dropped the ball. I'm glad they're back on board. I'm glad that Julian's case is now fashionable again. But we, DiEM25, never, never, never let the ball drop. We'd never consider the political cost to us and to our movement from continuing to support Julian Assange, because we are principled. It doesn't matter whether we lose or win. It doesn't matter if we wither into nothing or succeed into changing the world. People like Julian, for us, represent principled activism. And that's what we are. Thank you.
I have a question on the, maybe somebody can answer, maybe Anas, because I read that there is a possibility that he might might be able to go to Australia? Like, is there a possibility that he might end up in Australia at the end of the story, or is the support from Australia just like a, yeah, just a minor thing which might not have a huge impact?
Thank you, Juliana. Yanis, maybe I can bring you back in quickly just to respond to Juliana's question.
Yes, Juliana, look, well, there's been a change in Australia. The change is that the previous Labour Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, when we were struggling to get some sign of support from her, disgraced herself by saying that Julian was getting what he deserved because he was a spy and because he was, hacker and whatever. She was terrible, terrible. Julia Gillard, the former Labour Prime Minister. This Labour Prime Minister has come out in support of Julian. And he even promised to pressurize Biden to end the persecution. Unfortunately, if he did, he did so in such a lukewarm way that it had no effect. And one can say, well, what could he do? Well, he could do a lot, because you may have heard of the AUKUS treaty, the Australian-UK-United States treaty, which came into force or renegotiated about a year ago. Australia committed to spend tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars on American nuclear submarines. He could easily have slipped in a term, a condition that, you know, we are going to do that, but first you have to drop the persecution of Julian Assange. Of course, no Australian politician, no mainstream party Australian politician has the guts to do that. Okay. Having said that, look, I'll tell you what my feeling is, my estimation is. Biden, he wants Julian Assange to be extradited because he wants to satisfy the national security apparatus, cabal. He wants to throw him in a supermax jail. I don't know for how long, and try him in a kangaroo court, because it's very important to know, for everyone to know, whether you're supporting Julian or not supporting Julian, what that court case will look like in the United States. It will be held behind closed doors, number one. Number two, now, get what I'm going to say now, because the human mind has difficulty wrapping itself around what I'm about to say. His lawyers, not him, his lawyers will not even be told what the charges are and what the evidence is. Did you get that? Not only is there going to be no open court case where, you know, under habeas corpus you have the right to hear what you're being charged with, his lawyers will not hear what evidence there is to charge him. The one judge, no jury, will hear directly from the CIA and the NSA, I don't know who else, what the evidence is, and the judge who is selected by that apparatus is going to decide. Now, Putin's courts are more fair than that and more liberal than that. I close the parenthesis. So the idea is to put him through this process, hold him in one of those disgusting cells in a supermax jail, crush him completely as if he's not crushed already, to convict him so that he has the label of convicted criminal on his forehead. And then the best you can hope is that they will then extradite him to Australia to serve the rest of his term, 170 years. But of course, the Australian government will bring him out on bail and he can stay at home, but not be able to travel anywhere. I think that is the best you can hope if he's extradited to the United States. Still, we want him out in any way or form. Let's hope that we stop the extradition from taking place.
Thank you, Yanis. Judith Meyer from Berlin.
Thank you, Michael. So I have to agree with Ivana. The state of our media is absolutely terrible, especially here in Germany. I don't think that we can ascribe the whole problem to lack of whistleblowers. We don't know if they're whistleblowers. How would we know? I believe that also outlets have become a lot less likely to publish anything. Like when Julian published his documents, he had outlets in Germany, in US, in France, and so on that published his documents. And now our outlets are not even publishing like official information. Like the ICJ, the court day, the first day of the court hearing was not published, was basically ignored, especially in German media. And it's just a completely different playing field. And we urgently need more independent media and to support independent media that might have the ability to become a place that whistleblowers could trust and could turn to. So basically, looking at the bigger picture, I believe that we will remember 2023, 2024 as the years in which we learned that there is no international justice, no freedom of press, no human rights for anyone that the Western establishment doesn't like. But that doesn't mean that these ideas are silly idealism. The invention of principles like the freedom of the press, like human rights, and the idea that you could turn to an international court to get justice, the invention of these ideas make our world a much better place than it was before. And this was the first step, the invention. The second step was to instill a sense in people worldwide that these principles are universal and should be followed. We also accomplished that. I think it's widely accepted now. The third step was to create international institutions. We also did this step. Now the fourth step is the only step left, is the fourth step, which is to ensure that these institutions actually defend the principles that we need them to defend. But that is a much, much better situation than if we were still on step one. So that is the fight now. And I think that this year, everyone knows that this is the fight because a lot of the smoke and mirrors are disappearing very fast. And we're getting a clear picture. So as Yannis said, absolutely, the world is watching these British judges. It's watching the ICJ. It's watching the European Court of Human Rights, watching the journalists who are staying silent through this. And we will find a way to remove them from office if they fail to do their duty.
That was Judith Meyer from Berlin, Germany. She's a linguist and author and has been working for DiEM25 since 2016. DiEM25 is a pan-European progressive movement. They aim to democratize the EU before it disintegrates. The recording you just heard, The War on Truth, Julian Assange with Yannis Varoufakis, was streamed live on February 20, 2024, the first of 2 days when London's High Court met to decide whether Julian Assange can be extradited to the U.S. That hearing ended without a judgment, for which we will likely have to wait until mid-March 2024. In the meantime, the campaign for Assange's freedom grows. You can watch the full 58-minute video of the live stream on YouTube under the title The War on Truth, Julian Assange, Media and Global Discourse with Yannis Varoufakis and more. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, TUCRadio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. While you're there, you can subscribe to weekly free podcasts. Our email address is TUC@TUCRadio.org. TUC Radio takes its name from an aeronautical term. Time of useful consciousness is the time between the beginning of oxygen deficiency and the loss of consciousness, the brief moment in which a pilot may save the plane. My name is Maria Gladden. Thank you for listening.